welcome back once again to Shotgun Saturday Nights, the unofficial fan cast where we discuss, dissect, and gush over two of our favorite podcasts, King Falls AM and Improv on Tape. Once again, just as a reminder, this podcast does contain spoilers, specifically for King Falls AM Episode 31, The Forgotten, and Improv on Tape Episode 3, Season 3, Episode 5, A Hodgepodge of Fuckery. So if you haven't caught up with us, or with one or both of the shows, like I always say, go back, listen. We'll be here when you get back. We're not going anywhere anytime soon. So let's go ahead and get started. Again, I'm Dana, and just a shout out to Dawn. Cecil's fine. Sorry, had to throw that out there. If you've been a long-time listener, you get that inside joke between us. Anyway, in keeping with the original format of the show, starting out with kind of my rant of the week, or rant of the 2 weeks. Florida is passing legislation that teachers can no longer talk about race or mention anything to do with sex, gender, or sexuality, or sexual identity. They cannot teach that one race, religion, ethnicity, or sex is inherently superior to another race, religion, ethnicity, or sex, and an individual, by virtue of their race, religion, ethnicity, or sex, is inherently racist or oppressive, whether consciously or unconsciously. This sounds good on the surface. You can't teach that group A is better than group B because of XYZ. Sounds good, right? But the crux of the bill, as we all know, is CRT, which, it bears repeating for the people in back who did not hear, is not taught below the college level. So what really they're saying is teachers can't teach anything that may make certain people, white people, feel uncomfortable. So it makes it difficult for them to teach things like the 3/5 compromise, for example. They cannot teach where in the 1800s black people were counted as 3/5 of a person because of voting and representation in the government. They cannot teach that this was morally wrong. They're allowed to say that black people were counted as 3/5 of a human being, but they can't say this was wrong, that they were not counted as a full human being, that they were not considered full-on human beings. So this has been passed. They are also trying to pass, and DeSantis has basically said he'd sign off on it, another bill. They call it the Don't Say Gay Bill. This bill prohibits the discussion about sexual orientation or gender identity that is not age-appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students. However, the bill does not define age-appropriate or developmentally appropriate. So it gives parents the ability to sue the school or the teacher for teaching these subjects. It's also extremely dangerous for the LGBTQ+ students because it strips them of their ability to talk to someone they trust or to feel that they are in a safe place or a safe environment when discussing their sexuality or if they have questions about it, and so on. I encourage you guys to read up on that. If you are in Florida, go talk to your school boards, see what you can do to not get these bills passed. I would say, call your governor, but yeah, we all know how that's going to work out. Oklahoma is passing a similar law. They are passing a law that teachers cannot teach anything that could be considered contradictory to religious beliefs. Teachers can be fined or sued for a minimum of $10,000 for each offense and can be suspended from teaching in the state. So basically, Oklahoma isn't worried about their teacher shortage. And what this does is it gives parents the ability to have books removed from school libraries. And if they think a teacher is teaching anything that contradicts their religious beliefs, like, say, evolution, they can have the teacher fined, they can have the teacher suspended, they can sue the teacher personally for teaching evolution. The bill also prohibits teachers from trying to raise funds to pay any lawsuits, and it prohibits the schools from helping teachers pay the lawsuits. It's saying that these fines and penalties must come out of the teacher's personal funds. I don't know how that's going to work. Thank God I'm not in Oklahoma. But this impacts subjects like biology, science, social sciences, literature, health, etc. And again, it does not define religious contradiction. But let's be upfront, it defines anything that's not considered, quote, Christian, end quote. Because let's face it, we all know if a Muslim goes to the school board and says, I don't like what that teacher was teaching, it contradicts my religion, the school board's not going to give a flying fuck. We all know this. So also, if you're in Oklahoma, same thing. Find out what's going on with your school boards. Find out what's going on in your children's school. Again, I would say contact your governor, but it's going to do no good whatsoever. Now, like I've said before in previous episodes, I'm in Colorado. As far as I know, here in Colorado, being a blue state, we are not putting any of these types of restrictions on teachers. So, and neither are any of the other blue states that I can think of. We are also facing shortages thanks to COVID. So I'm kind of wondering how many of these teachers are going to start leaving places like Florida and Oklahoma and coming to states like Colorado. I would invite all of the teachers to come join us here in Colorado, but I'm not going to be the one to pay you. Sorry. So do what you got to do. But if they do start fleeing the state and finding jobs where they are safe to teach actual facts, I'm kind of left wondering who's going to be teaching the kids in these other states. You know, what are they going to be taught? Math? Great. Math is an excellent subject. You need to know math. It's extremely important. But what are you going to do if you can't write your name, but the only thing you can do is add 2 + 2? So, yeah, these are the future leaders of our country. I don't know how they're going to be able to lead effectively when they don't know anything. And honestly, you know, parents, if you feel that strongly about it, pull your kids out of public school, send them to private school, homeschool them. Let the normal parents, and yes, I use that term very loosely, send their kids to public school where they can learn something. And legislators, I got nothing for the legislators, honestly. I have a bad feeling about this, and I hope I'm wrong, but yeah, just bad vibes, bad juju all over the place. It was somebody, I overheard somebody talking, and I can't for life of me remember who, was talking about creationism and not evolution, and how they believed in creationism and they didn't believe in evolution. And I'm not stomping on anybody's beliefs, by the way. If you believe God created the world in 7 days, I'm not going to stomp on that. But having this discussion with this other person, it was left to... The example that I was given was like a real-world example. Give your kids the advantage of knowing both, so that they, if you do believe in creationism and pass that belief on to your children, they can better defend themselves in the real world. I was taught, and this other person that I was talking to were taught, it's more like a metaphor, like 7 days versus 7 billion years. You know, I'm not God. I'm not the creator of the universe. How long did a day last before humans were put on Earth and we started counting it as 24 hours kind of a thing? During the creation of the universe, who's to say a day didn't last 7 billion years or a billion years when the sun was still forming, so we didn't actually rotate around it yet? I'm sorry, I went off on a total tangent, and I hope you guys at least understood a little bit of what I was trying to say there. Yeah, so sorry about that. Anyway, on with our show. King Falls. What did I say this episode was? Oh, The Forgotten. This episode originally aired on August 1st, 2016. We start out with the boys are talking about a special guest that's coming into the studio. Sammy is just all up in arms about this is a bad idea in light of what happened the last time this person showed up. And Ben is smiling because he thinks Sammy's acting like a baby. Ben's just trying to keep Sammy safe because everyone thought that the guest was a skinwalker, and by everyone, we mean Ben, Walt, and Cynthia. So obviously we know that he's talking about Storm Sanders. And Ben is claiming that it's going to be perfectly safe for him to come to the studio, that Merv hired him to do a weekly weather forecast. So he's just coming in, you know, once a week, do the weather forecast, and he's going on about his merry little way. Sammy counters Ben's casual attitude with, you know, how does anyone know he isn't a skinwalker? And he also reminds Ben that Storm came from Channel 13. Now, of course, he's not Burt Gladstone or Maggie Masterson, who Ben wouldn't let anywhere near the studio. And, of course, he wouldn't be nearly as cool with the situation if it were either one of them. But, you know, Ben keeps claiming Storm didn't get fired for being a skinwalker. He got fired for being a drunk. Of course, I guess that all depends on whose perspective you're looking at. Because he did act like he was kind of drunk in the beginning. And, you know, Ben's cousin is a drunk, like young Cecil-level kind of drunk. And he doesn't go around turning into a bear or stealing souls. So obviously there's a difference. Not that either one of them could tell the difference that night. Sammy doesn't even know what a skinwalker is. So he's just very uncomfortable with the whole situation and thinks it's extremely dangerous. Ben suggests that they take a break and settle it, but Sammy, sarcastic as always, agrees, saying that while they're on this break, he's just going to go open the door and invite the vampires and the werewolves to come in too, because they do, after all, need a new traffic and current events reporter. Ben, taking everything way too seriously, points out that vampires would make terrible traffic and current event reporters because they only come out at night, so they don't have a clue what's going on. You can almost hear Sammy roll his eyes at this, because of course, as we all know, and by we I mean Sammy, vampires are fictional characters. They don't actually exist. Ben once again mentions taking a break so that maybe they can go grab a soda before Storm starts his report, which takes Sammy totally by surprise. And he asks Ben, like, you know, I'm sorry, is Storm coming to the studio tonight? To which Ben replies, like, Storm's been in Chet's office since 3:30 waiting to be announced. And Sammy would know this if he, and say it with us, folks, checked his emails. Sammy says he'll check his emails right now. He'll check them while he types out an angry email to Merv about the safety of his employees. And he hopes that Merv has got some really good insurance. And of course, Ben wants him to just let it go. It's only once a week. At this point, the boys break for their first commercial, and it's a Ron Begley ad campaign. Ron says that, you know, obviously he was born and raised in King Falls. He's a native to the area. And he's not a politician. He's just a concerned citizen. And he's running for mayor. And he's a man. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I can't sing like Ben. I apologize. But anyway, Ron approves this fucking message. So, yay, Ron's running for mayor. We knew that, of course. But this is our first Ron Begley ad. And we all love it because we all love Ron. And we all think Ron would be a way better mayor than Mayor Grissom, who we can't stand for many, many, many reasons. And many more that will come out as the King Falls AM storyline develops. When we come back from the commercial, Ben is accusing Sammy of not adulting, while Sammy teases Ben for singing on Ron's ad. Like, oh, I'm not adulting, but you're sitting over there singing on an ad. Sammy is also still voicing his concerns about Storm being a skinwalker or a demon and turning them into skinwalkers. Ben says Storm is not a skinwalker. Again, he's just a drunk. And starts to tell Sammy what Merv said, but Sammy doesn't care. He interrupts. This is a dumb idea. Ben even says he put a mic in Chet's office so that nobody actually has to look at Storm. And Sammy's like, oh, I get it. You're afraid too. Ben denies this. He's not afraid. But Sammy will be rude to, or Sammy is being rude to the new addition to the show. Sammy wants to put it to the listeners if they should risk putting their lives on the limb by letting a supposed skinwalker into the studio. Which, I mean, basically is Sammy admitting he really is afraid of Storm. He does say that, you know, creepy stuff happens in town. He gets it. But it's a totally different situation when creepy stuff is happening at the station. And, of course, that's why Ben, whispering, says again he put the mic in Chet's office and he locked the door. At this point, the lines light up. First caller, line two, and it's Finn. We haven't heard from Finn in quite some time. He's still out there driving the big rigs. He's doing well. He was just passing through town and happened to be listening. So he was calling about the topic at hand. He's like, a skinwalker in the station? Come on, guys, that's creepy. He listening last time that Storm was in the studio and tried to steal their souls. So Ben asks, you know, how the whole werewolf situation is going, trying to change the subject. Finn laughs like, hey, you guys must have, my wife must have heard you guys talking about this. And you must have put this in her head because she's been making me take some flea baths and getting all kinds of shots. But hey, it's not like he's the one working the sponge. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But really, it's all a matter of perspective. I mean, the guy's putting it out there, and that just made, you know, funky stuff happen. And he's not a werewolf, or he's implying that he's not a werewolf, although his throat does get sore, or a little hoarse on nights after the full moon. And he has pulled a muscle chasing the mail carriers back home because they're just so darn chasey. And also, he cannot stop watching the Twilight movies. He thinks it's the greatest love story of the generation. And yes, he is Team Jacob all the way. Next caller is Line 9, and it's Storm. He's pissed because he's... can hear what's going on, and he's heard these two talking shit about him from just two doors down. And why is the door to Chet's office locked? And Ben, you know, claiming technical difficulties once again. Storm says he fell asleep on the couch and now he's all itchy. And like, what do you mean this is, you know, Chet's office? It looks more, or looks more like a, like Chewbacca's beehole than a green room, because Ben told him it was a green room. And Storm is now way upset that he has been sleeping on some crusty Chet pillows. And he keeps saying it's getting hot, even though Chet keeps his office at a constant 69 degrees. Because 69, as we all know, is probably Chet's favorite number. Anyway, Storm yells at the boys to come and let him out, to come open up the door, let him out of the office, and they hang up on him. Ben says he's got to go let Storm out. And Sammy's like, go ahead, I'm going to lock you out of the studio if you do. So, of course, that starts an argument about Sammy being afraid of every little thing that can steal their soul. Ben leaves and Sammy takes a call while Ben goes off to take care of Storm. Line 8, it's Troy. And he wants to know if his two bestest buds in the whole world have a man locked in a room. He tells the guys that they absolutely cannot have a person locked against his or her will inside this, locked in a room against his or her will inside the city limits, and he ain't too sure about outside the city limits either. They need to let this man out ASAP, which, of course, Ben is on his way to do. Sammy, meanwhile, asks Troy exactly how far he is away from the station. Troy's like, oh, I'm just a few minutes away. I'm just taking a perp to drop him off for shoplifting. Taking him down to the station, which Sammy's like, what? That's like 20 minutes away. That's not right around the corner. Ben comes back into the studio, and says they aren't holding Storm on purpose. Ben hadn't even left the studio yet. They aren't holding Storm on purpose. He puts on some sunglasses and kind of tosses a pair over to Sammy as well. Then he leaves the studio to go get Storm. Troy is saying he better be letting that man out. And he's never heard Sammy, you know, sound so afraid of anything. And tells him to put on his big boy britches and face the storm. No pun intended. And just don't look him in the eye or mention Channel 13 or anything that'll piss him off, or Storm might come go grabbing at his everlasting soul. Troy hangs up just as Storm enters the studio. Sammy welcomes, and I use that term loosely, Storm into the studio. Storm needs to let his eyes adjust after all the neon in Chet's office. Ben, you know, trying to make conversation, asks how things have been. Storm's like, yeah, I've been doing okay. You know, did a stint up in Big Pine, not the correctional facility, Paradise Big Pine Rehab. And he discusses that with Sammy, who he calls a racist and soccer mom kind of insults. But in the meantime, he's been living off of his severance pay from Channel 13. And he wants to know, you know, does Chet Scotchgard that sofa? Because he thinks he's getting a rash. Ben tells him it's just Chet cooties. But, you know, hey, if you want to go home, you know, you can. You know, we'll handle things from here. He's like, no, that's okay. He's just feeling a little bit weird. So Ben, you know, again, still trying to make conversation and make sure everybody's still calm and nobody's, you know, trying to steal anybody's soul, asks what Storm has been doing to occupy his time. To occupy his time, had to take a drink, I apologize. Since he hasn't been working, Storm says he left Big Pine early. He hasn't had a drink of alcohol in years, so he doesn't really need the rehab. Drinking's just not his thing. So in the meantime, he's just been spending a lot of time staring at green screens and trying to gauge the humidity level with his skin. Because meteorology was his life. And you kind of hear him hiccup a little bit. Which is why he jumped at the chance to come to the station when he got Ben's email, because, you know, Merv would have sent the email inviting Storm to the station if he'd have had it. Storm notices now, finally, that the boys are both wearing sunglasses at night, indoors, and asks them why. So, you know, they try to tell him, hey, well, you know, we both had LASIK surgery. You know, it was a 2-for-1 deal. It was a great thing. It was buy one, get one free. Storm hiccups again and starts talking about being itchy. You know, is it itchy in here? Is it itchy inside the studio? He tells the boys to take the sunglasses off. Sammy tries to take a call, but before he can answer the line, Storm demands they take the sunglasses off. Sammy goes once again, tries to go back for the phones. Storm thinks he should just do the weather and go. They take a call. It's line 4. The voice is familiar. It tells Ben that this is a foolish venture and to lead the skinwalker to the door. Ben tells the caller to chastise him later and hangs up. We all recognize the voice. It's Walt. Although the boys, or at least Sammy anyway, doesn't catch that right away. Ben knows who it is. Sammy tells Storm, you know what? You're right. You're not looking so good. Why don't you just do the weather? Go home. You're like, hey, Ben, how is it outside? Ben says, it's dark. I'm like, there you go, guys. It's dark. Go on home. You know, wait. It'll be light again. And, of course, we get the famous Storm, you know, dark ain't no weather quote. And it's dark because they still have their sunglasses on. Storm once again demands that they take these sunglasses off, and he stands up like he's about to walk across the studio and rip them off of the guy's faces, I'm guessing. Because now they're starting to piss him off. But when he does stand up, he sounds a little woozy. Sammy says he doesn't look good, tells him to sit back down. Ben points out, like, dude, hey, there's a trash can over there. Please don't hurl in the studio. Storm starts to cough. Sammy suggests that either Storm or the boys need to leave the studio. Like, somebody's got to get out of here, and it's either him or us. You start hearing a buzzing noise. And Storm, like, tells them nobody's going anywhere. Sammy's, like, tells him again, just go home. We'll take care of the weather. And in a booming voice, Storm asks Sammy, you know, like, are you dad voicing me? Sammy just kind of out loud is saying to the universe that he hopes Troy is still listening and on his way up the mountain. He tells Ben, like, hey, dude, you're near the door. Why don't you leave while I stay here and talk to Storm, try to calm him down? I see some lights in the parking lot. Go get Troy, because he's assuming it's Troy. They make a run for it. Ben somehow is still on the air. There's kind of a, I guess, Sammy trips and falls at some point. Because Ben asks if he's okay, and he's like, yeah, Sammy's giving me the thumbs up. He's still okay. It's Walt that's there in the parking lot, not Troy, but that's okay. Walt is I think, better in this situation. Ben made it to the parking lot and was looking for Sammy when he discovered Walt was there. Walt confirms that Storm turned into a swarm of some kind of evil when the Skinwalker realized he was cornered. Walt wants to know, what is all this foolishness about, Ben? He's not Ben's personal protector, so you know, he can't be running around doing this kind of shit all the time. Ben's like, look, the only reason I brought Storm to the studio is because I couldn't get a hold of you, and I really needed to talk to you, and I didn't really think it was that bad, because Ben, God love him, doesn't always think. At some point, we find out that the swarm hit Sammy full force on his way out of the studio, and he blacked out. That's why he was giving Ben the thumbs up earlier. So, yeah, he's okay. Walt is still chastising Ben, who apologizes for putting him and Sammy in this danger. But it's, of course, notebook stuff. Sammy starts chastising him, too. This was dangerous. And, you know, what would Sammy do if something happened to Ben? What would Ben's mom do if something happened to him? Like, you know, Ben, think bigger picture. We get it. You know, you're out here to help Emily, but you got to think of everything, not just these tiny little bits. And besides, you know, Sammy wants to know what Storm had to do with any of this. So that's when Ben admits he just called Storm to lure Walt out because he couldn't get a hold of Walt. He needs Walt's help with the shadows. He knows that Walt knows more than he's letting on about the shadows. And he's hoping that Walt will lead him to the shadows. But Walt is repulsed. He's like, yeah, no, Ben, you cannot mess with the shadows. They see all. They know all. They are all. They're everywhere. They've taken way too much from Walt, and he's not going to let them take any more. And if Ben tries to seek out the shadows and go to them, he's going to be next. Sammy is like, yeah, you know, Ben, I agree with Walt. This is way too dangerous. There's got to be other ways we can look at getting Emily back. Walt tells the guys that the shadows are the forgotten. And he tells Sammy, you know, stay hydrated, watch over Ben, stay inside the studio, lock the doors, don't let anybody in, don't leave until the sun comes up. And that's where this episode ends. So Ben is now starting to get desperate. He's looking at every possibility as to what can be going on. What could have taken Emily? What could have happened to her? Anything that he can do to get help from somebody, even if it's a bad idea, which obviously we find out this is, that's what he's after. So that's where this ends, with, you know, Ben just causing more trouble than anything else at this point. To Improv on Tape. This episode originally aired on October 12th, 2021. We open up with the actors doing their usual, you know, giving one another shit, like they always do. It's always fun to listen to. Noah is still on about the Two Clitties book. I think he's a little bit more interested in that book than he's letting on. Trent is weirdly turned on, and Heather is feeling good. Yeah, nobody ever said I could sing. Heather sings better than I do. Heather, actually, a lot of people sing better than I do. Heather, Noah, Sammy, Troy, yeah, all of them. They all sing better than I do. Doesn't take much. Anyway, previously on Improv on Tape, we start out with Heather as Moaning Myrtle, reading a passage from A Tale of Two Clitties. We are then reminded that Moaning Myrtle and Hermione were having some fun in the bathroom while the boys were off trying to gather intel on the Chamber of Secrets, and that people have gotten petrified. Hermione is currently in the hospital because she is still a cat, or partially a cat. After they visit her, Ron and Harry head back toward the dorms when they run into Filch standing in a puddle of water coming out of Myrtle's bathroom. They think it's probably because she's doing figure eights again, and it's Myrtle, so, you know, that's quite plausible. Filch takes off and leaves the boys to clean up the mess. While they're in there, they see a book in one of the toilets, and they ask Myrtle, you know, is this your book? Did you drop your book? Or did you make the mess while you were reading your book? But no, that's not her book. Two Clitties is in the next stall. That's a different book in this toilet. The boys wonder what the book is, but, you know, it's in a toilet. They don't want to touch it. That's disgusting. They see a name on there that is T.M. Riddle. And somehow they notice that the pages are blank. It must be open in the toilet. I don't know. Somehow they fish it out with bondage ropes from Myrtle. And when Hermione is feeling better, they go to show her the book. She's back to being herself, but she does still have some cat-like qualities. For example, she coughs up a hairball that looks remarkably like the carpet in the common room. But it's not her fault. She's just a natural rug licker. That's just how she was born. And nobody shame her for that. There's nothing wrong with being a carpet licker. She asked the boys, you know, did you wash your hands after you got the book out of the toilet? But Harry says, you know, don't worry. It wasn't, you know, toilet water. It was just Moaning Myrtle's bean water. Or maybe it was Ron who said that. Hermione and Ron try spells to see if they can see what's in the diary, but nothing works. And I guess they hold on to it and forget about it for a while. Because the next thing we know, it's February, and Lockhart is decorating the Great Hall pink for Valentine's Day, and he's talking to a dwarf. When the dwarf sees Harry, he goes over and sits on Harry's feet and starts singing him a song. You know, roses are red, violets are blue, this song stinks, and so do you. it turns out that the song is a Valentine from Ginny. Harry encourages her to sing her own songs to him. So she starts out with, you know, Ginny's got a wand, and it turns into Ginny in a bottle, which we all know. So he tells her, you know, maybe she should try out some new material, and he's also a little bit hurt that, you know, her song saying that he stank. So anyway, when he goes to bed that night, Harry tries again to figure out what's going on with the diary. So he tries writing in it this time. The writing disappears, but then a voice whispers to him that the diary belongs to Tom Riddle. And he wants to know if Harry can draw and if Harry will draw him some anime. And then come and visit in his memories. The voice tells Harry to come inside, take a look. It's in a book, and Harry is pulled into the book. He is in the former headmaster's office. This is the memory of the headmaster from when Tom was a student. And the headmaster is accusing Tom of practicing dark magic or black magic. And he uses Mr. Puppet to tell Tom to stop practicing this kind of magic. You're not allowed to practice dark magic or black magic or gray magic or even off-white magic. He's only allowed to perform good, friendly, white magic. Because, you know, that's not overtly racist at all. No conjuring demons. Because Tom's, talks about maybe sometimes he needs somebody to talk to, so he conjures a demon. And he tells Tom, Mr. Puppet tells Tom, you know what, no conjuring demons. If you want somebody to come talk to, you come talk to Mr. Puppet. Then he also asks Tom, you know, who taught you this? Where did you learn this kind of magic? Tom says he learned it from a book, but before we can find out what the book is or where he got it, Harry gets sucked into another memory. He's in another corridor in a dungeon underneath the castle where he sees a young Dumbledore. This Dumbledore has, you know, auburn hair, and he's very muscular, and he's hot. He's, like, super hot. Like, Harry is a little overexcited about how hot Dumbledore is. Or maybe he's not. Maybe it's not overexcitement. Maybe it's just the right level of excitement for Harry. Anyway, Tom wants to see Dumbledore do some twirlies and be all sexy. So Dumbledore's like, okay, I will, but, you know, you have to keep the chamber here underneath the castle a secret. Oh, and by the way, stop using dark magic. Tom makes no promises. Harry is left in the dungeon for a while. When he hears a young Hagrid approaching, and it looks like he's trying to hide something. Tom asks Hagrid what's in the box. It's a spider. Hagrid says, you know, he borrowed some Muggle comic books about Spider-Man, and he wants to strap the spider to his arm and squeeze him like Spider-Man does to shoot, you know, webs. Tom thinks it would be funny if they start a rumor that Hagrid got bitten by the spider, and now he is wrapping everybody in, like, web cocoons, and he doesn't know what the actual word is because it's science and he doesn't believe in science. And I don't know what it is because I didn't feel like Googling it to look it up. Wraps them in web cocoons or whatever they're called, and that he's biting people. Hagrid's like, are you sure this is going to be funny? And Tom's trying to convince him when Harry gets thrown back into reality. He goes off to find Ron and tells him, you know, the diary belonged to Tom Riddle, and I got sucked into this book, and it was like watching, you know, a Thursday night lineup of CW teen dramas. He tells Ron there's this super hot Dumbledore, like with the muscles and the arms and the pecs and the hair. Ron's like, yeah, I've seen under them robes. You know, I could see where he is probably still pretty damn buff, too. He also tells Ron about the previous racist headmaster and what he said to to Ron, and that he sounded a little bit weird, like a dragon with a puppet. He tells him about Hagrid, and that Hagrid's not hot. Hagrid was never hot. Hagrid's, you know, big and bearded, and he's just not a hot guy. Hagrid is coming to see the kids and to hang out, and he overhears this. And so he runs off crying, because poor Hagrid. I mean, how you gonna tell Hagrid he's not hot? Come on. I mean, he's not my taste, but, you know, if you've read the books or seen the movies, you know, he's got at least one woman after him. And he's hot to somebody, and that's all that matters. If he's hot to the person that he loves, that's all that counts. Doesn't matter what the rest of us think. Anyway, in the meantime, Harry, Ron, and Hermione talk about going and confronting Hagrid, but really is it more confronting or comforting at this point? And apologizing, Hermione accuses Harry of fat-shaming Hagrid. He's like, I never fat-shamed him. I never said he was fat. I just said he wasn't hot. Then they go off on this tangent about the boys are trying to gaslight Hermione. Hermione's trying to gaslight the boys. You know, people just need to stop gaslighting each other because apparently their favorite pastime at school when they're not studying, which is Hermione's real favorite pastime, is gaslighting one another. Anyway, the three head over to Harry's room because apparently at some point Harry told Ron to come see his new underwear, which is kind of a weird request, but okay, let's go check it out. When they get there, everything is out of place. His room has been ransacked, things are broken, things have moved, and Harry notices that the diary has been stolen. Then later on, Harry and Ron follow McGonagall to the hospital wing where they find out that Hermione's back in the hospital. This time, she and the Ravenclaw prefect have been petrified. They ask her, like, what the hell did you do to Hermione to get her here? How did you petrify Hermione? But she says, no, I didn't do it. It has nothing to do with me. Just count yourselves lucky that the snake only takes smart people. They're like, what snake? What are you talking about, snake? But she won't say anything. She leaves. Ron and Harry go to see Hagrid underneath the invisibility cloak. Ron tries to navigate but keeps bumping into things. We find out later that's because Ron does not keep his eyes open. Apparently he doesn't realize you can see through the cloak, so he closes his eyes. I don't know what that's all about, but we actually hear about that a little later on. They talk a little bit more about who's gaslighting who, and eventually Harry is like, let's just go, I'll lead the way. They realize they're never going to make it out of these kinds of situations without Hermione, because she's the smart one, and we all know that. She's got to let the women do the work. When they get to Hagrid's, they, still hiding under the cloak, kind of hide in a corner. Dumbledore comes in with the Minister of Magic, Cornelius Fudge. They're talking about having too many dwarves and how this is a problem for the school. Filch is afraid one of the dwarves is going to take over, you know, his job. Hagrid comes in. They're at Hagrid's hut, I guess, because they think it's safer than talking about this in the school where they can be overheard by students. Hagrid comes in, he shows up, he thinks that they're talking about Aragog. So he comes in and he just automatically starts in with Aragog's not the one causing the trouble. He doesn't have the powers to petrify anybody. You're looking for a Medusa or a sculptor from Doctor Who or something, because as we all know, the weeping angels from Doctor Who don't move when you're looking at them, but they move really, really fast when you don't look at them. And so far, none of the students have moved at all when nobody's looking. So they're not weeping angels. Honestly, I'm just thrilled that they put a Doctor Who reference in here. I'm like, yeah, guys, there you go. Some Doctor Who fans, we'll talk later. We'll talk who later. Anyway, Fudge then sends Hagrid off to Azkaban. I guess he takes this as an admission of guilt from Hagrid, so he sends him off to Azkaban. Hagrid tries to escape, but Dumbledore won't help him, so he gets stuck in a window. Lucius Malfoy comes in and explains that the school governors have all signed a petition for Dumbledore to step down as headmaster. Dumbledore does agree, and he steps down, but he tells Lucius he better watch the fuck out, because he's going to come after him later. Hagrid gets somebody to help pull him out of the window, and as he's leaving, he gives Ron and Harry instructions, because I guess apparently he knows that Ron and Harry are there underneath the invisibility cloak, that if anybody is looking for things that they may need to help them out or to help further the plot line or get him out of prison, there's a claymore sword and a sawed-off shotgun duct-taped underneath the table. And if that doesn't work, they can head out into the forest because they will find something there. The next day, Harry and Ron are trying to figure out exactly what it was that Hagrid was trying to say, what he meant. Harry thinks it's pretty easy. You know, we should take the shotgun and the sword and go out into the forest. And Ron, not being the smartest person in the group, thought he was talking about a murder-suicide, that, you know, they would, one of them would take the gun and shoot the one and then shoot themselves or impale themselves on a sword. I don't know what Ron was thinking. But basically, Ron repeats they are screwed without Hermione. And now that Dumbledore and Hagrid are gone, they have no help whatsoever. And they wonder, you know, who's going to help them out? How are they going to get out of this situation? Draco interrupts and he starts mocking them about how screwed they are because his dad fucked over their side when he got Dumbledore to step down. He was basically fired for tax evasion because, come on, he's got the only, you know, Phoenix left and he's not paying taxes on this. And have you seen the inside of his office? Yeah, so it's all just some big scandal, apparently, with Dumbledore and his taxes. Harry accuses Draco of, you know, it's funny you should mention your father. You know, he was limping around because you must have sucked your father off. He's like, you know, dude, Harry, if you knew anything about sucking people off, you know that has nothing to do with it at all, about why he limps. And Harry's like, well, yeah, maybe it's just because you drained him so dry his kidneys failed and his liver fell in on itself. Let's see. Harry sees a line of spiders heading toward the Forbidden Forest. So he pretends he feels sick and he's like, you know, Ron, help me out. Ron's like, I'm not helping you if you're sick. Ron, don't listen to my words. Look in my eyes. I'm feeling sick. You need to help me. Ron gets it. The light bulb comes on. He's like, oh, yeah, okay. Let me help you. You're feeling sick. Let's go. Draco wishes them well because he doesn't want the rivalry to end. Ron and Harry head towards the forest with the invisibility cloak. This is where Ron learns, oh, you can see through it? Duh. They take Fang along with them. They also stop and get the claymore sword and the shotgun out of Hagrid's hut. Harry holds on to both of the weapons because, quite frankly, he does not trust Ron with them. And if you've seen Ron with his broken wand, you will know why. They hear something in the trees behind them. Ron tries to blow up the tree. They see Ron's car, and his dad is living in the car. The car is now living wild in the forest. Ron's just happy to see his father. But the car takes off and takes off before they can get his dad out and find out what's going on. Also, the car talks. Yeah, so that's different. A talking car. But whatever, it's magic. These things happen. They are met by a horde of horse-sized spiders. One of the spiders was talking to Harry, but the narrator interrupts, which pisses Harry off. He's like, I was listening to the fucking spider, Chris. Come on, narrator. So now they all have to sit and listen to what the spiders have to say, to listen to the spiders clicky-clacking. And somebody even mentions something about the spiders tap dancing. And the narrator is like, no, Harry, you wanted to listen to the spiders? You sit and listen to the spiders. Even though Ron and the spiders are like, no, we want out. We don't want to sit here and do this. Like, too bad. Harry wanted to sit there and listen to it. Y'all get to go play along with this. One of the spiders speaks does the monologue from Emperor Palpatine, you know, strike me down, let go of your anger, from Return of the Jedi, because apparently that's the only DVD that the spiders have. One of the spiders is a Southern Belle. There's a Disney spider that sounds kind of like Mickey Mouse. The spiders eventually pick up the boys and carry them to a web dome where they meet Aragog, who is blind and kind of drunk. He's also a little bit sad because he just, you know, went through a bad breakup. Aragog wants the boys dead because they don't care that he's sad about the breakup. But Harry and Ron try to plead for their lives. Harry pulls out the claymore and the shotgun and threatens them. And Aragog tells the boys, you know, if they don't start talking about Hagrid, he's going to suck them harder than Draco sucked his father. The boys start yelling Hagrid's name, like, Hagrid, 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 because they find out that that is Aragog's safe word. The narrator gives Aragog's backstory that, yeah, he was given to Hagrid as an egg and raised in captivity. They ask Aragog, you know, what petrified their friends and Colin, who they don't care if Colin stays petrified or not. He tells them, but there's a censor bleep, so we have no idea. Harry mentions something about, you know, maybe Aragog didn't hear them or didn't understand them, which then, of course, pisses Aragog off because now he's accusing Harry of being ableist again and didn't care about him being blind, and he, now they're saying he can't hear very well. Basically, at this point, all hell breaks loose. All the spiders are threatening to kill the boys and the dog and suck them off. They're yelling about who's gaslighting who again. Aragog tells the spiders just go eat them. The boys start to run, but Ron is stuck in the web. Then they hear a car horn, and the car comes back and opens the doors and tells the boys, come on, come get inside of me, guys. Come on. It kind of speaks in like a little bit of a Southern Belle accent, but not to the extent as the spider. Sorry, the frog is back in my throat. Anyway, it hollers for them to get inside. Mr. Weasley is inside of the car and they drive away. Mr. Weasley is wearing the skin of a unicorn. Now, he tells the boys he didn't kill the unicorn. He didn't try to drink his blood. He, you know, ran over it. And also, there's a dead centaur in the trunk. But he claims that centaur was there before. You know, Mr. Weasley says, you know, I didn't kill the centaur. He was already there. I don't know how he got there. Anyway, he's very happy. And asks Harry, Harry asks him, you know, does he have a Capri Sun dick? So this is a callback to a few episodes ago. I don't remember the exact episode, but it's a callback. Ron tells Mr. Weasley, you know, hey, I accept your new lifestyle. I'm not going to help you out with it, but I accept it. Harry gives him some money. He's like, dude, here's a sack of money. You know, go get some help. Next thing we know, the boys are back in the dormitory, and Harry has basically an epiphany. He realizes that Tom Riddle spells Voldemort. And that is where this episode ends. Once again, just like every other episode, these actors and creators and writers are pushing boundaries, which, you know, I'm okay with. I don't have a problem with boundary pushing. They're a little weird. They're a little out there, but we love them for it, and that's all that matters. So anyway, that's the end of this episode. I do want to put it out there because I'm sure you guys are going to be sick of listening to me talk to myself. And I know I caught myself talking really fast at some point, so I apologize for that. And again, I apologize for the frog in my throat. But if anybody wants to come on and be a guest, if you're a fan of one of the shows, or if, hint, hint, you're involved in any way in one of the shows, talking to you cast members and creators, let me know. Come on the show. We will chat. We don't even have to chat about the show. If you listen to this podcast and you have something else you want to discuss, like, oh, I don't know, a podcast of your own, you know who you are, and you want to come on and talk about it, you come on, we'll talk about that. We can give King Falls a rest for a week. Anyway, so yeah, I'm just putting that out there into the ether. Do with it what you will. So anyway, yeah, this has been Shotgun Saturday Nights. It is recorded and edited by me. Our opening theme is Get Ready by Festline Studios, and our closing music is A Slumber of the Blackwoods by As Above, So Below. Follow us on Twitter at ShotgunSammy71, Shotgun Saturday Nights on Facebook, or email us questions, comments, concerns at ShotgunSaturdayNights@gmail.com. Don't forget to like, share, and review. Don't forget to wear your mask, wash your hands, and get vaccinated. And I will talk to you all in a few weeks. Love you guys. Bye.